to the Movie Planet's bonus show. All of the bloopers, outtakes, and discussions that have nothing to do with the movie of the week, well, we decided, let's make a show of that too. Enjoy. Okay, we assigned each other homework assignments, an idea we started back in 2016 when we did the playground. JC and I would assign it. I remember the first homework assignment he gave me, which was it was a Snowy River movie.
Oh, okay. Like the Man from Snowy River.
Man from Snowy River. Yeah. And I was like, okay. He goes, it's one of my favorites. I was like, okay. So I watched it. I remember halfway through calling my mom going, this movie sucks. It's so bad. I go, she's playing a piano, but it's not even the right music. It's not even the right. She's not even touching the piano sometimes. It's hard to watch. Everyone's got an Australian accent until they don't have an accent all of a sudden. I don't know what's happening. but we decided to do that. And so we're going to bring this thing back because we have a lot of spaces in our pantheons. And this is just a nice, quick, and easy way to start to fill these because Josh likes to overthink movies the way that I do. And because of that, we can actually give some pretty decent recommendations for these pantheons and give some solid grades for them without having to go through the entire rigmarole of the actual movie itself.
Yes.
So this week, I assigned Josh Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping for the mockumentary pantheon. And Josh assigned me Casablanca for the drama pantheon. So we're going to start with Pop Star. Josh, I'm going to give you my quick thoughts on the movie first. Okay. And then you can give yours as the final word since it was your assignment.
Got it.
Okay. So for me, Pop Star, Never Stopping, how do you top a musical mockumentary like this Spinal Tap? It's hard to do. Do you even try? Well, The Lonely Island figured it out. You could argue that this movie is actually a modern retelling of this is Spinal Tap because of how close to the specific subgenre it is. However, what this movie does beautifully is it never feels like you're watching another Spinal Tap. This is the Style Boys. This is Connor for real. This is today's music scene that is lampooned. It is updated, it is fresh, and the jokes don't feel recycled. They are all new and perfection. The Lonely Island creates this magnum opus with this movie. It's 5 minutes longer than Spinal Tap. And it moves just as well with a tighter plot line that pushes the movie forward at a pace that's easy to get through. By the end, you feel like Goldilocks. It wasn't too long. It wasn't too short. It was just right. The jokes weren't overly done. They didn't hold back. It was the sweet spot. The only place this movie falls short from Spinal Tap is the legend of the film, which Pop Star will never reach. The generation that grew up with Spinal Tap was able to laugh at the ridiculousness of some of the stage acts, which makes Spinal Tap a perfect mockumentary. Pop Star, the generation it's mocking, doesn't get the joke yet. Someday, maybe they will, but I don't think they're there yet. So for me, this movie is an A in the mockumentary pantheon. That's why I assigned it. Now, Josh, you saw it. I'm nervous. Go.
Okay. So I do feel like I need to preface by saying I am firmly not in the camp for this. I'm very fickle when it comes to comedies, especially parody films, right? And I feel like this hues closer in tone to something like a Scary Movie than it actually does Spinal Tap, tonally speaking. Plot and world-wise, Spinal Tap, right? This is not a compliment, though. So I find it very fitting that this comes from some SNL alums, because this feels too much like an average episode of Saturday Night Live to me.
Oh!
Yeah. It is mostly...
My dick hurts.
Mostly okay. Inoffensive background noise with a couple musical breaks that I don't really care about. And I'm totally willing to accept that this might be a me problem. Okay? But I dislike the music that's being parodied as well as the parodies.
Oh.
Yeah. It did provide some laughs.
You're fucking me like you fucked Bin Laden.
There were some laughs. The highlight for me is Bill Hader as Zippy the Roadie.
Yes!
Being a proponent of flatlining as a form of recreation. I thought that was inspired.
Yes.
On the other hand, I really hated the bit of him being such a shitty roadie that he knocks over all the guitars and breaks their strings and stuff. Like, that's a hat on a hat. It doesn't need to be there. And in the world, he should be competent. Just have this one weird thing.
But remember, in the world, they're not even using the instruments.
This is true. That's why he's tuning a Rogue guitar, right, which you can buy at Walmart, I think. Yeah. But this, the Flatliners joke feels like it's beamed in from another movie, which is part of the problem. I feel like these jokes have been done better, not just by Christopher Guest, multiple times, mm-hmm, right? Not just Spinal Tap. You've got Mighty Wind. You've got Best in Show. That he's trod this mockumentary ground. But I feel like it's been done by other SNL alums in their series Documentary Now. Fred Armisen and Bill Hader have been all over this ground. And I really don't care about the modern TMZ reality approach that this movie takes.
Which they mocked also. The TMZ scenes also.
Yes. But I really hate the world that's being mocked. That TMZ stuff like just sets my teeth on edge. And so the over the top parody of it, mm-hmm, is even worse. I don't want to see an exaggerated version. For the record though, my least favorite Documentary Now also takes the same approach where they do a Vice, which had a very similar to TMZ, like bro-y kind of documentary, right, thing. It's just too shrill for me in a way that I find really off putting. I can't fault anyone else for enjoying this. It's solid. Technically, the concert setups are pretty wonderful. Like, those scenes technically seamless. Apart from a couple laughs early on, I really only liked the last 15 or 20 minutes when the Style Boys all get back together.
For the donkey roll.
If it had more of that, like, easygoing charm of the Lonely Island guys together, mm-hmm, I would have liked it a lot more than all of the star cameos that we got. For that, and more...
And more.
I feel like I could go on, but it's, you have a, stop beating him. He's dead. I'm giving it a D+. So where does that put it in the ranking?
Allow me to refute.
Uh-huh. Hey, try not to suck any dick on the way to the parking lot.
So that gives it an 81%. That's a B-. Uh-huh. As an average for a mockumentary, it's below What We Do in the Shadows.
Okay.
So it goes, this is Spinal Tap, What We Do in the Shadows, and Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping.
I am fine with this ranking.
I'm fine at the current ranking of number 3.
It's going to be hard.
Of course, it is only 3.
It's going to be hard when other things come in for 4 through 7 and knock it down.
I just love the fact that they decided to update the music industry.
Yeah.
Because although this is Spinal Tap is great, today's viewers don't understand what those shows were like.
Right.
They don't get the 70s nature, right, of those. And like, to in my head, because I'm older, I can still see. I love the joke of you put the apostrophe, there's supposed to be 2 apostrophes to make it inches instead of feet. And yes, now Stonehenge is like 1.5 feet tall.
Yes.
You know, I still think that's funny, but it's not funnier than seeing 1 million fans go around a limo and a guy shows up with his dick and just lops it over the window.
Judd Apatow's dick.
Shut the front door.
That is what is claimed, is that that's Judd Apatow's cameo in the movie.
Well, I did not know that.
And now you know more about Judd Apatow than he did a few minutes ago, too.
And you know what it is? It's also another incredible Tim Meadows performance. Yes. Tim Meadows, again, brought up, a great comedian. I love him in everything that he does.
Tim Meadows, probably my second favorite line of the movie is, Tony, 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 Tony.
Tony?
Yeah.
What I love is that they had to get Tony, Tony, Tony to agree to this.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
But even like, I love the Lonely Island songs because, mm-hmm, they're well produced and they're well written too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, you know, and I know you compared this movie to Scary Movie, where Scary Movie took the same ideas in Scream and gave the quick comedic perspective of it.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like this one wasn't really mocking anything Spinal Tap did.
Right, right.
And honestly, there are scenes in there that we're laughing because that is really it.
Okay.
That is really it. And we're looking at it from this perspective of the background scene going, I actually like this, but at the same time, should I like this? Like,
right,
the scene where where they go to is his partner and he goes, you know, we got to do something bigger. Here, put this light on your head.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, that is exactly the same shit we see with the dead mouse and all that stuff.
Yes.
And when it turns on, it shoots up to the sky. You're like, we all think it looks cool, but it's fucking ridiculous, actually.
And it makes this sound.
Like Hans Zimmer was in the room.
Yeah. Why does it make that sound? I don't know. It's just cool that it does it.
That's exactly it. Yeah. And also the rapper he goes on tour with. Mm-hmm. And you don't know where he stands on anything. He's like reading wallpaper.
Yeah.
And even Conforio's like, I don't know if he's joking. I just like the fact that they played it so seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still laughing my way through it. Like, it'd been a while since I've seen it. And when I started watching it again, I personally was just laughing my way. I was like, this is, again, something that today's generation is not going to get for at least another 10 years. When they look back and they go, we liked this shit.
Right. That's for me, the first, I had a real bad time the first big chunk of it.
Okay.
And I was like, just not laughing. Elizabeth came home. I was watching.
Yeah. What did Elizabeth think, by the way?
She comes home from whatever she was doing the other night and she goes, oh, what are you watching? I'm a pop star. And she's like, and? She was so hopeful. And I'm like,
yep.
I'm not having a good time.
What'd she say?
She was surprised.
She's like, you're sleeping on the couch.
She's not that surprised because she knows me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, she kind of saw that coming.
Okay, all right. Yeah. I'm glad that you are as authentic as you are, Josh.
Yeah.
I really am. I'm glad that you have an opinion. And despite what everybody around you may think, you still have your opinion.
So, quick market research.
Yes.
The majority of people that rate Popstar on Letterboxd, this is 27% of the ratings coming at 4 stars.
Oh, okay.
That's almost 43,000 people rating it at 4 stars.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah. This is Spinal Tap, comes in with 39,000 at 4 stars. So 3,000 less, 4,000 less.
But it makes sense because Popstar's newer.
Yes.
Letterboxd just opened, what, 2012? Was that when Letterboxd started?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But Popstar's a 3.6. Spinal Tap's a 3.9. They're not that far removed with their average rating.
Now, rating on Tomatoes, 83% for the top critics.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And because we like to be fair in here, let's see what the bad people said.
Okay.
Just for fun, just for shits and giggles. Popstar Never Stop, Never Stopping contains inspired and often hilarious jabs at today's pop music industry, but it's not a well-rounded movie and certainly not this generation's This Is Spinal Tap.
Ooh. Okay.
That hurt a little bit. That's exactly what I just said. This Is Spinal Tap was able to turn the knob up to 11. With Popstar, 4 on the dial is the best one can reasonably expect.
That's a little rude.
The songs were great.
So I thought
Mona Lisa's overrated. I'm So Humble.
I'm So Humble is good. But the songs in Spinal Tap are basically one step removed from the shitty metal songs that were out at the time.
Yes.
You know what I mean? They're not that ridiculous. And I feel like they're funnier because of that.
Okay.
These songs are so far afield. You would never have Justin Timberlake singing Fuck Me Like Bin Laden.
But even better, I love the fact that he shows up as just an average cook. And you're like, that's the actual star right there. And you know he is.
Yeah, it bothered me a little bit. It's a little too cute.
Okay.
And he's, you know, every time it
cuts. Talking about cutting carrots.
Yeah, every time it cuts to him, he's like, eh. He's got this kind of like we know. It's a little winking.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
This is you right here. Okay. Halfway through Popstar Never Stop, Never Stopping, I kind of wished it would stop. Okay, so we've talked about Popstar. We've given our grades. Now it's time for me to shit on a movie called Casablanca. Okay, let's turn the tables, motherfucker. No.
See how you like it.
Yeah, okay, Josh, you told me to watch Casablanca.
Yes.
It had been a while since I'd seen it.
Okay.
And after watching it, I was like, oh, yeah, I have seen this before. I have owned the movie forever. But now is my chance to actually put the time in and do it. So, Josh, go ahead and tell your piece, and I'll say mine.
Okay. So Casablanca comes in at 63 on BFI's most recent Sight and Sound poll they did in 2020. Sight and Sound poll is where they take filmmakers and critics from all over the world and collect their ballots.
Okay.
I think you each give 10 and they rank them based on weight, and they came up with the top 250.
Okay, all right.
So Casablanca comes at 63. This is behind movies like Vertigo, The Godfather, Blade Runner, as well as some international classics and some more contemporary films. This is a climb of 19 spots for Casablanca over the last 10 years, though. The last time it came in at 82.
Okay.
That's how math works, Joe. I don't know if you know this.
Gee, thanks.
So,
do I got a soundbite for that one?
So that means it's only grown in the estimation of critics worldwide. However, it does not even crack the top 100 on the director's poll. So I feel like this is an important split. Critics recognize the clever dialogue, the quick pacing, and the drama of the movie. Boy, is there some drama to be had.
Yeah.
But it's fallen out of favor with the directors themselves, as craft-wise, I think it can be seen as stodgy and old-fashioned and not commercial for today's standards.
Yeah.
So,
not to interrupt you, but to push back, I can also see why the popularity would have grown in the last 10 years, because we have more and more people in our society today dealing with, do I get involved, do I not get involved? Which is kind of like the central theme of this.
Yes. Okay.
So I can see them going, well, this is actually reminiscent of what we're dealing with today.
Right. But I think that's story-wise and dialogue-wise, not film directing craft-wise, which Michael Curtiz has multiple movies in the top 250 and in the top 100 of the director's poll. He's very well represented. I think Curtiz was very much like this is my job kind of a guy rather than an auteur.
Yeah.
But he is well respected and he did really good work with this assembly line that they had in old Hollywood. So I did some digging in the Sight and Sound numbers. It looks like only one director had Casablanca in their top 10. So Scorsese, Tarantino, Spike Lee, all these people, Christopher Nolan doesn't even crack their top 10 anymore.
Okay.
So this sums up the movie for a lot of people, I think, right? It gets looked at as a classic that you probably don't have to watch. You've gathered most of its qualities through cultural osmosis.
Yeah.
The Simpsons have done it. Animaniacs has done it. You've seen bits and pieces in lots of other movies. So I'd rather look at it as a key for people to unlock and understand that period of Hollywood's output. It's simply one of the most approachable movies of the period, and it's entertaining as hell, right? It's like starting your Shakespeare journey with Romeo and Juliet. You get a little bit of everything, and it's been used so much that everyone understands what's going on.
Yeah.
When Harry Met Sally references Casablanca multiple times throughout the movie, and even cops the first song that Sam plays for the soundtrack for When Harry Met Sally. Harry Connick Jr. does a version of It Had to Be You.
Yes.
Right. Talk about cultural impact, right? Like it's lasted multiple generations, multiple iterations of itself at this time. So on its own, I think it's still an incredibly worthwhile movie with lots of moving parts to its drama. There's romance, intrigue, politics, and people's personal values are all at play in the coastal city of Casablanca. Its core relationship still hits me right in the heart. I find it very emotionally touching to witness what they had, what they no longer have, and what he gives up. So it doesn't move me to tears. It gets pretty damn close. On its own, I think it's a fantastic movie. It's one of the best things to come out of the studio system for that. Now, this is where we have to talk about how does a classic movie work in the pantheon?
So
what do we want to do?
So yeah, I'm glad you brought this up before I get into my little soliloquy here.
Yeah.
obviously there are movies that I agree with you were impactful at the time, should be viewed as impactful of that particular time, and are not going to be as modernly lauded.
Right.
If you will, but are still incredibly important to way we look at things today.
Yes.
So you and I were talking about this, and I postulated perhaps we have a category, a subcategory for each one of our pantheons, mm-hmm. for classic movies of that genre to go into so that they're not forgotten completely.
Right.
Because some of the things that I'm going to say are going to knock it down because, again, I'm looking at it with modern eyes, mm-hmm. such as dialogue. We don't talk like that anymore. It's a hard thing for us to wrap our minds around. But the dialogue at that time, especially in Hollywood, that's how they wrote a lot of their stuff. Mm-hmm. Say, that's how we do it, huh? Yeah. You know, it's important to recognize that it was of its time. So if we were to do this, if it's a, we, I guess we got to come up with a year break to be like from this year back.
Ooh,
right.
Okay.
Or, we have, we like, for, this is for the drama category. We've mm-hmm. got our drama movies, and then we have, it sounds like Coke Classic, drama classic.
Right, right.
And, but when you nominate, you got to tell me which one we're doing.
Yes.
You know? So if you say, oh, I'm doing Casablanca for drama, I'm like, drama. Okay.
You're right.
You asked for this.
Right.
You know? But if it's drama classic, then I know exactly where I'm going with this movie.
Yes.
How to judge it that way. Because there are movies that we are, in, especially in this show, we will never get to unless we have that classical category.
Yes.
And they are important things to talk about. So we can either have a year cut off, or we can have, we just have a classic category and you got to nominate it for that category.
I think classic category and we will know discussion wise, right? If someone comes up like, I don't really think it's going to compete in the main drama category, but I'm going to put this movie from 2007 in the classics. No, fuck you. We're not doing that.
Well,
that's not a classic.
And here's the thing. As we continue the show for the next 20 years or so, you know, it's hard to see that Motley Crue's being played as classic rock.
Yeah.
Is it classic rock or is it rock? Just older rock.
Well, and when they put like Sunshine and Lollipops, and that's classic.
Yes.
And then you have Guns N' Roses up next to it. Like these things happened 30 years apart.
Yes. So I'm up for the idea of just having the separate category and you got to nominate for that category.
Yes, I think so. And that changes my score mm-hmm. because of how I look at it as a classic Hollywood movie, a classic Hollywood drama
yeah.
versus all of dramas for all time forever.
And it impacts my score also.
Yeah.
My score will actually be higher than what it is. And I gave it a relatively high score compared to what I've normally done dramas anyway.
Yeah.
But and some of the things I'm going to say in here are meant for the idea that I am who I am. I'm looking at things as, you know, watching it as just casual Rube viewer, me, right. and just, this is what I saw. But that being said, I think I conclude this with something that's going to be a little more favorable.
Okay.
Towards what it is.
So, in the
classic,
drama category, and that means more spreadsheet work for you.
I have no problem with that.
I know you don't. You absolute sicko.
I'm going to copy this whole thing and then make a separate one. Just put classic on each one.
you complete pervert. I can't believe that people enjoy this work.
I am a sick individual.
Yes. So I'm going to go for classic drama. It's got to be an A+. It hits right there for me. I think it is some of the best from the era.
Classic. Okay, so you give it an A+. That's 2 A+s, by the way, that this man has given out today, although Jackie Brown was the other one. It wasn't Popstar.
Yeah. I wish it was. But
okay, now it's my time to upset the apple cart. Okay, 1942, classic. Mm-hmm. Definitely inspirational to filmmakers of the future. Lots of flares I see that were mimicked in later filmmakers' oeuvres, such as our beloved Spielberg. Mm-hmm. Musically, John Williams definitely picked up some pointers from Max Steiner, taking a theme and doing different variations on it to match the mood of the scene. Movies like Raiders of the Lost Ark was clearly inspired by this. Acting wise, let's be honest, there are drawbacks that time has created that were not apparent back then. Line reading and acting is very wooden. This may have been the style in 1942, but it doesn't feel natural 90% of the time compared to how we talk today. Cinema has evolved from this standpoint, so I have to knock it a bit for this. I think this backstory of the movie is more reason why this movie is timeless than the actual story itself. The balance of whether this movie is war propaganda and whether this movie is for entertainment purposes is melded beautifully and doesn't beat you over the head with the messaging the way directors tend to do today. It's elegant in throwing a message at you without you feeling like if you don't subscribe to it, you're a hateful asshole. That's what we do today. I don't factor in the importance, and I put in quotations, of a movie when I grade it because it tends to be a lazy reason for those that believe in the message to silence those who don't. That being said, the message of the movie and the time at which it came out to give that message makes this movie one where the audience today can look at this as a period piece, and I wrote piece wrong, and get just what you need.
I wasn't going to call you out, but I wanted to.
It's period piece, man. Okay. And get just what you need out of it. With the backdrop of a war, the romance of Bergman and Bogart, and the idea that Rick has to make a decision on getting involved in a war that is ravaging Europe or remaining neutral is one that we should understand today if we were to ever see such a heinous war like we saw in WW2. And no, we're not there yet. We shouldn't make every single issue a Casablanca issue. That being said, everyone has a little Rick in them, whether they believe it or not. The overall question of isolationism versus engagement is done very much in a vacuum and can be exploited by those who use the goose versus gander argument. But hey, that's the engine that pushes the message of propaganda, right? This movie is a war movie. It's a romance. It's a drama, and therefore it transcends genre. However, strictly speaking as a drama, I tend to err on the side of asking myself, do I feel the drama when I watch this? You felt it. I feel the anxiety. I feel the stress of the situation. And the love story is classical enough to buy into as one in the appropriate period. In 1942, this is an A, maybe an A+. Today, if it was just for the drama genre, I'd give it a B+. Mm-hmm. But being that we're putting this in classical range, I'm giving this an A+ also.
Yes.
So, you have to imagine here. Josh and I have been teasing each other about this movie for like the last couple weeks. Like, oh, I can't wait to get into this. And I'm glad we had that melding of the classical idea of these movies.
Yeah.
Because I think you can agree with most of what I said in regards to its time period and what it was. I know you don't agree with the stuff I say about it now,
right?
Or maybe a piece you do as it does, and you got, well, it wouldn't be released now anyway.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But the fact that we were both looking at this and we understand that this is a top tier movie. It is.
Yep.
For even to the point where this movie, some say, and we don't have the receipts for this, but we kind of do, that this movie helped profiteer the war movement.
Right.
You know, it was a war movie that helped to push the war.
Yeah.
So two A pluses out of us in the this is our first induction into a classic category. And I'm so happy it is an A plus doing it.
Yeah.
We deserve that as our first insert in.
I love it. And let me pick up one of your little threads here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I think the way you came out, we're kind of on the both same side of this. You talk about the line reading, the acting, and probably the dialogue, the way things are written, not being the same today. But I feel like it's important. The onus is on the audience to make the connection back to the material, just like the Shakespeare connection, right? Like, there's still very worthwhile drama to be mined from that. Mm-hmm. Along with lessons to be learned. So I think kind of the same thing. We can watch different versions of it, but it behooves us as audience members to do that little bit of work to like get in the mindset of, oh, and that's why I think this is a good one that could unlock classic movies for a lot of people.
Yes.
Like if you get in and you see Bogart and he's like this brooding dude and he kind of talks in soliloquies, you get on the wavelength and it gives you a little bit more, something like, another Bogart movie, High Sierra, is a little bit harder.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Although, you know, there's some other
Maltese Falcon.
What's the one with the treasure of the Sierra Madre?
Yes.
That is a great movie with, I feel like, a great message, that carries across time about greed undoing men. Mm-hmm. That's a great one. Yeah. But I feel like you kind of have to, might have to inch your way into those, but I feel like the work is worthwhile.
I would say this, if you are an average viewer like I am, and you hear Casablanca mentioned in three movies, it's time to watch the movie.
Okay. Yes.
If you hear it mentioned, there must be a reason why it keeps getting mentioned. Mm-hmm. And much like everything else that we do with the classics of these genres, as we nominate them, I think instead of doing a background of these movies, like the making of, we more talk about the world we were living in at the time.
Yeah.
And where, like, this is what was going on societally and culturally in the world. And that's why this movie is being nominated, because the behind the scenes doesn't matter.
Right.
At that point, it's back then we made movies for a purpose. It wasn't just to be, let's make $1 million at the box office. No, it was, sometimes it was a message they were trying to get across, as you said.
Yeah.
And in this case, Casablanca, you hear it. I knew everybody knows Casablanca, but most people haven't seen Casablanca today.
Right.
You know, it's in the zeitgeist, if you will. So check it out. But before you do, Han, you know, do a little homework as to what was going on when this movie came out. And you'll understand it even better.
Well, and one of the opening lines of the movie is a dumb American tourist,
yep,
in quotes, saying, we hear very little and understand even less.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, I'm like, they're kind of putting us on blast, on blast a little bit.
But isn't that Hollywood to just sit there saying, we suck?
Yes.
You know what? We actually don't. We're actually pretty damn great.
But this... the problem is this conversation gives me pause to what I was going to pick for your homework. It makes me want to pick something that's going to go classic, to like expand a classic.
We can always have them.
Yes.
It's never going to go. It's not like this is our last day together, Josh. We'll never, ever talk again. Yeah. It's not going to, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. These little assignments are not the long form show.
Right.
It's just like, hey, let's have some fun with this. And it could even be movies that we've both seen before. Like, I'm almost thinking about changing yours right now.
Yeah.
To Weekend at Bernie's.
Oh. okay.
Just because I think it'd be more fun to talk about for a second here. Like, and that being said, I know it's a piece of shit movie.
Uh-huh.
I know it is, but I also know I've talked about Weekend at Bernie's since the first day of this entire show. Which is, I always reference it as, Weekend at Bernie's is the example of how you could have a global killer. It is an F as a movie. It's stupid all the way through. But God damn it, I love it. And every time it's on TV, I have to watch it.
Yeah.
Everything about that movie makes no sense.
Yes.
But I can't stop watching it. Everything about it. So I'm going to... You know what? I'm going to save Weekend for the next one.
Okay.
We're going to rip, because I know that 7 is something you struggle with. Rip it. You said that last time.
Struggle with.
You said you were like, oh, 7. I don't know if I can dive into those waters.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's complex. Okay. I'll save it.
Okay.
I'll save.
I was going to say, I nominated because I was like, we're ripping the Band-Aid off on this one.
No, it's, I mean.
It's Fincher. It's post Alien 3.
Yeah.
So this is where his movies really begin.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. You all heard it. He just said it. He just said it. Okay. I don't know why I'm looking out the window like there's an audience. There isn't one.
I mean, you know, it might begin with Madonna music videos. We could call those little films, filmettes, if we will.
It might have started with the birthday movie that you saw with Quentin Tarantino.
There. Yeah, there you go.
All right, so what'd you think? Was this fun?
Yeah.
Little quick hits?
Yeah, I like it.
All right. So next week, I'm assigning Josh 7 for the mystery thriller, Pantheon. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I'm assigning is because it's 1995. It's David Fincher. He's 3 years removed from Alien 3, the disaster. And this was his follow-up. It's a hell of a rebound movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that may have saved his film career in the long run. The performances are amazing, including Kevin Spacey, who breaks out big time for his career with this one.
Oh, yeah.
And who doesn't like Morgan Freeman?
Yeah.
It was a cold day, you know? So that's why I'm assigning it. I was like, okay. Cause when I was trying to figure out what to do, I was like, I keep talking about Alien 3 and I'm sorry, but, I was curious. I was like, well, what did he follow up with and how long? It took 3 years. And I was like, wow, he was really maligned unjustifiably because it wasn't his fault. Alien 3 was the way that it was.
Right.
It was the goddamn company. It was Weyland-Yutani, if you will. They screwed everything up. Okay. So Josh, do you have one for me?
I do. And we're going with another classic director.
Okay.
not classic, modern classic director.
Modern classic.
Yes. With Joel Coen's The Hudsucker Proxy.
The Hudsucker Proxy.
From 1994. Yeah, we get... I really love this movie.
Yeah.
I really do. But it is partially based on my love of old Hollywood movies.
Okay.
Which this is... it's not the scary movie pop star version. It is the Scream, right? My problem with scary movie has always been, how do you parody a parody? Because Scream is an over-the-top, ridiculous version of slasher movies, of slasher whodunit films.
But see, I don't see it as parody. I see it more of an homage. But when does an homage become a satire?
Yes, that's a good question.
Because it doesn't make fun of it. It calls out and then mimics the call out.
Yes.
Why would somebody go out the front? Why would somebody go up the stairs and they're going out the front door? And what does she do? She goes up the fucking stairs.
Yes. but in a much more, I feel like, loving way, this pays homage and kind of sends up the same sort of relationships and newsroom drama kind of things that we had in the 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And Jennifer Jason Leigh is to die for.
There was a time for that lady.
Yes.
Yeah. Fast times. Okay. All right. Well, okay. So we've done our homework there. So I got Hudsucker. You got Seven.
Yep.